thinking of something greedy, something like that. In the age of Kali, one isn't held responsible unless you act on that something. The statement here is, if you think of something good, it acts. That's nice, huh? I think I should chant my rounds. You get benefit. Oh, I just have to think about chanting my rounds. And no, it's not that you get full benefit, but there's benefit. If people just think favorably, oh, Krishna is nice. And just go on. There's benefit. What to speak of if they do something to serve Krishna. So he knew that. He knew that it was the age of Kali, Kali's around, but my duty as king, since he surrendered to me, I was going to kill him, but since he surrendered to me, I have to allow him to live. And after all, it is his age. But I'm going to promote in my kingdom the activities that are beneficial. And when those activities that are beneficial, when the hearing and chanting is abundant, Kali can't exert his influence. Nice point. Maharaj Parikshit considered that less intelligent men might find the personality of Kali to be very powerful. But that those who are self-controlled would have nothing to fear. So there's two categories of people. The self-controlled and the uncontrolled. And common people are uncontrolled. So he had some responsibility to give protection and shelter to those that are common people. And the way for the common people is to have the fearless people or the devotees of the Lord engaged in congregational chanting for the benefit of the people in general. Or other types of religious activity or devotional activity that common people can just come along and take part in. The king was powerful like a tiger and took care for the foolish, careless persons. And then he summarizes saying, O sages, as you did ask me, now I have described almost everything in summary fashion regarding the narrations about Lord Krishna in connection with the history of the pious Maharaj Parikshit. Those who are desirous of achieving complete perfection in life must submissively hear all topics that are connected with the transcendental activities and qualities of the personality of Godhead who acts wonderfully. He's appreciating their questions. And while their interest, the sages of Naimisharanya, they were interested in the benefit of persons all over the world, that persons all over the world would be less influenced by Kali, so they had planned this yajna. He's saying that just by your hearing these messages, that's being accomplished. And more, as we're going to hear just a moment. So then the sages, that's Sutta speaking, it's 11 verses. Then the sages reply, Oh, Sutta Goswami, may you live many years and have eternal fame, for you are speaking very nicely about the activities of Lord Krishna, the personality of Godhead. This is just like nectar for mortal beings like us. Now, mortal beings, we say, and we serve lemonade, we call it nectar. But there's the nectar of the gods, and then there's eternal nectar, like the nectar of devotion. Rasa, amrita. Bhakti rasa, amrita. And the topics about Maharaj Parikshit and the Pandavas in relation to Krishna, that's that bhakti rasa, amrita. And so we were asking you how to diminish the influence of the stage, but what you've done is you've taken us completely out of this world. They say, we have just begun the performance of this fruitive activity. They were planning a yajna, a 1,000-year yajna, a karmakanda yajna. And to have the karmakanda yajna, they had their fires. And they weren't getting anything from the fires except smoke. And their faces were, they say, our bodies had become black from the smoke. That's the only benefit we were getting. No benefit, in other words. We were hoping through, because karmakanda yajnas have basically one of two purposes. One is getting something temporary, knowledge, health, wife, business success, prosperity, something, material benediction in this world. Or, option two is something after this life in the heavenly realm, an upgrade into another situation. So worldly or heavenly. But for those to be effective, even for worldly and heavenly, there have to be qualified brahmanas that can perform those yajnas. And in the sage of Kali, there aren't the qualified yajnas, brahmanas to perform the yajnas. Even the sages were acknowledging themselves. This is just after the beginning of the age of Kali. We are not getting anything out of this. While we were wanting something material, that is, diminishing the influence of the age of Kali and bringing in piety in this age of Kali, it wasn't happening. But now that you've come to this yajna arena, we're getting something far more. That, but something far more. So this is, to keep it short, Prabhupada's understanding or explanation that if you have $1 million, you have your $10 and $100 problem solved. But we wanted our $10 and $100 problem solved, and you've given us $1 million. You've given us more than $1 million. You've given us spiritual awakened state of consciousness. We are factually pleased by the nectar of the lotus feet of the personality God at Govinda, which you are distributing. The value of a moment's association with the devotee of the Lord cannot even be compared to the attainment of heavenly planets or liberation from matter. You've come to give the topics of Krishna, and because you're giving the topics of Krishna, we can't even compare what you're giving to the things that we were wanting. We wanted something of this world and perhaps of the next world, but what you're giving can't even, the Prabhupada explains, where there's points of similarity, you can make some comparison. If there's no point of similarity, you can't make any comparison. No point of similarity. It's just of another dimension altogether. It's an important understanding when it's one of the offenses against the holy name is to consider the chanting of the holy name to be one of the ritualistic activities offered in the Vedas, known as fruitive activities or karmakanda. So the recitation of Srimad Bhagavatam, or Bhagavat Saptaha as it's popularly done in the world, is valued, unfortunately, as something that will bring good fortune to a family that sponsors a Bhagavat Saptaha, or if you go and attend it. You'll get a feel-good experience and you'll get some piety. And with that piety, it'll increase your prosperity. There's a material incentive. A pious, but material incentive. What Bhagavatam is saying is, it's completely wrong to make such a comparison. Or to say it in a positive way, the proper audience needs to get the full benefit of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam needs to have a spiritual conception of what the messages of the Bhagavatam are, and needs to have no motivation in receiving that message of the Bhagavatam. And the speaker needs to not be deploying the message of the Bhagavatam to maintain themselves economically, or to bring some kind of reputation and fame and notoriety and prestige. Oh, he's such a good reciter. And when he recites, he sings too, and it's so nice. Let's go to the Saptaha. So if there's a material motive on either side, then the transcendental knowledge will not be passed on. That's Bhagavatam is giving us the positive and the beware sides of transcendental knowledge. The personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna, Govinda, is the exclusive shelter for all great living beings, and his transcendental attributes cannot even be measured by such masters of mystic powers as Lord Shiva and Brahma. Can anyone who is expert in relishing rasa ever be satisfied, satiated by hearing topics about him? So Sutas said, you've asked some questions, I've pretty much answered your questions. So they're saying, don't stop. We're never satiated. These are topics about Krishna, which the nature of the topics about Krishna is they're endless, and one never reaches the point of satiation. Rather, just hearing further and hearing further, it increases the rasa, it increases the taste. And when one has a taste, one wants to hear more. Please go on. Shaunaka is really good. He knows how to milk the cow. How to have Sutta continue to deliver nectar. And he's good because he's tasting the nectar. What Prabhupada is explaining here is that the primary qualification of the audience is eagerness. It's not. There's other things that are nice, but they remain nice, and they're not as essential as eagerness. In other words, if someone is situated in goodness, that helps. Someone has a background of piety, it helps. But a background of piety might also mean that they become proud of their pious asset. And so I don't need this, because I'm already there. I know all about Krishna, many people will say. So the sages have the qualification. They're speaking to Sutta is is clarifying what his qualifications are as a speaker, what their qualifications are as a listener, what the nature of the subject matter of Srimad Bhagavatam is. It's fully transcendental. With material things, there's a law of satiation. You may like ice cream. After eating ice cream a certain amount, how much can you eat? And whatever other thing there is, people like. We find that in our temples in America, the kids, the Indian kids, the number one thing they like is pizza. So we have a pizza table on Sunday. But after how many slices of pizza can you eat? After a certain point, it's no thank you. Or sleep. Some people like to sleep. At a certain point, you're satiated. You can't sleep anymore. Whatever it is. Something material reaches a point of satiation. Something spiritual, by its nature, never reaches a point of satiation. Rather, as already indicated, it increases the taste. Continuous hearing increases the taste. I want to hear more. Oh, Suta Goswami, you are a learned and pure devotee. Now, how does one become a learned person? Generally, one becomes a learned person by going to university and you study a lot, you take exams, and you become learned. But the Vedic process is different. According to our very nice verse in the second chapter of this canto, causelessly, knowledge awakens and detachment awakens in the heart of one who engages in devotional service. Who knows that verse? Vasudeva. You know the verse? Vasudeva Bhagavati.
Bhakti.
Go ahead.
Bhakti Yoga Kinchana.
Bhakti Yoga. Kayo jitaha janayata ashu vairagyam jnanam cha yadahai to come. You know that one?
Asudhya bhagavati bhakti yoga kayo jitaha janayata ashu vairagyam cha yadahai to come.
Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Jaga Prajita Janayati Asuraya Gyanam Chav Yad Ahaitu.
So Bhagavatam teaches that for one to become learned, you just become a devotee. Because when you're a devotee, you're eager to hear about Krishna. When you're eager to hear about Krishna, you become learned. Just become a devotee of Krishna. Vasudevi Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojita. Janayati Ashu Vairagyam, and detachment from so many needless things. And the spirit of detachment and the spirit of the exhibition of knowledge, because the Vedic model, Vedic picture of reality is that the soul has knowledge. Just like we're constitutionally servants, in that position as constitutional servant, we have knowledge. It's there. Anything that Krishna spoke to Arjuna, Arjuna already knew it. Anything that the spiritual master says, the disciple already knows it. And when that speaking takes place, there's the aha. When the hearing is right, it just awakens that which we've forgotten. Prabhupada said like that, explicitly. I've not come to teach you to his Western people. Western, you know, because what the way he was dressed and the way and his manner of his culture and his manner of speech was so different. But the message that he came was something he said, something that you already know, just that you've forgotten. The message of Bhagavad Gita is something we already know. It's eternal knowledge. It's with the soul. And by having that sound vibration resonated, it awakens that knowledge within the soul. That's how it works. It's not importing something from out there and bringing it in here, like computer science or technology or something. Learning how to play a piano, learning how to type on a typewriter. Those are motor skills that you practice and you learn. It's something from out there and you bring in here. This is a different kind of knowledge. It's knowledge that we already have, it just is awakened. The medium of that awakening is the sound vibration and the practical rendering of service. That's the science of restoring our Krishna consciousness. O Suta Goswami, you are a learned and pure devotee of the Lord because the personality of Godhead is your chief object of service. That's, he's learned it not because you've read so many books. You learned it because, and you're a pure devotee of the Lord because you have only one object in life. And therefore, that's the sign of learned. And the feature of learned is it's not, you're not a simpleton. You know so many things. But those so many things have become awakened in your consciousness and you can deliver them because you're learned and you're a pure devotee. Because this singular focus upon the Supreme or akinchana, vittaya, using the language of Queen Kunti from the 8th chapter, no other shelter. We all have some shelter. Shelter in the strength of our body, shelter in our cleverness, shelter in our intellectual manipulations of matter, and there are things that we take shelter of. Our daydreaming. We take shelter of our family members and our friends. We take shelter of different things. The qualification of Maharaj Parikshit, and the sages are now saying the qualification of Suta Goswami, is that he had no other shelter. And because he had no other shelter, he's a pure devotee, he's perfectly learned, and he can explain everything. And because you have all those qualifications, please speak more. Oh, Suta Goswami, please describe those topics of the Lord by which Maharaj Parikshit, whose intelligence was fixed on liberation, attained the lotus feet of the Lord, who is the shelter of Garuda, the king of birds. Those topics were vibrated by the son of Vyasa, Shukadeva Goswami. We're specific. We want to hear those things that brought Maharaj Parikshit to perfection. Those topics, please. They're so potent, and we're so eager to hear, and you're the one that can really deliver them. Please speak more. So they're showing, once again, the qualification of the speaker, the qualification of the audience, and the subject matter, that with the proper subject matter that brings about transformation of consciousness. It's a science. And if you have As with anything in science, you have certain conditions present. You set up the experiment, you set up the conditions, and you're going to get the same result every time. It's scientific. Prabhupada uses the phrase in one of these ports, scientific adaptation, which means like application. But, you know, according to time and circumstance, the particulars may look different, but the principles are always there. You're familiar with this term from Nectar of Devotion. There's principles and there's details. Rupa Goswami says, I'm only going to speak about principles. And I'm less concerned about details. And he gives an example. For example, a principle is one must surrender to a spiritual master. And a detail is different spiritual masters may give different instructions, or the same spiritual master may give different instructions for different individuals. Those are details. The principle is one must... So, this is the principle of what must be there for transcendental knowledge to be transmitted. Okay, so then just one more verse and we're all caught up with the Delhi folks. Thus, please narrate to us the narrations of the unlimited, for they are purifying and supreme. They were spoken to Maharaj Parikshit, and they are very dear to the pure devotees, being full of bhakti yoga. So that's a very broad appeal. In other words, to explain the whole Srimad Bhagavatam now, would you please? And as the discussion goes on, it gets more specific. Like, let's say, when Shukadeva Goswami begins speaking, Maharaj Parikshit asks specific questions. When Vidura is before Maitreya, he asks specific questions. But we just, because we're at the first canto, we're just hearing a broad request. Those topics which Maharaj Parikshit heard and heaved him to the transcendental position. I want to hear those. Broad. To do that, it's natural that Shukadeva Goswami will then explain the setting of Maharaj Parikshit hearing from Shukadeva. So it's the setting is the curse of the Brahmin, Maharaj Parikshit retiring from the king, being the king, and sitting down to hear, and Shukadeva arriving, his presenting his essential questions, and Shukadeva Goswami beginning his narration, and that's the rest of chapter 18 and 19. Okay, we just did a summary. See if there's any questions or comments from anyone. Yes.
How can we know that my activities are due to my foolishness, or it's the arrangement of the Krishna Bhagavatam?
I couldn't follow what you said.
Is my activities like some foolish results comes?
Your activities?
By my activities, if some foolish results comes.
If some foolish
results
come.
Yes. You know, how to understand
foolish actions come.
Foolish action. not understand that this the arrangement of the Lord or
those aren't arrangements of the Lord. Those are our foolishness. Prabhupada said that specifically. Something foolish was done, and someone commented to Prabhupada, Krishna's mercy, and Prabhupada chastised him. Don't blame your nonsense on Krishna. Krishna's mercy. It's due to inattentiveness. Krishna is ready to give direction. And we need to be attentive. Foolish things don't happen unless Krishna sanctions them. But Krishna also doesn't interfere with our free will. Free will choices go in the direction of something foolish. He doesn't interfere. He may prompt us by conscience to say, why are you doing this? But if we ignore Krishna, then we continue to accept him. He doesn't interfere. And then we reap, as you put it, some foolish result. Does that address your question? Or are you thinking of something specific? Or?
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
Are you satisfied with the answer? Or you wanted to explore it further? Okay.
Okay. You're explaining that whatever you desire in the age of Kali also is auspicious. Just desiring itself is also auspicious.
Yeah.
Means how do you understand it? Means it's only in relation to Krishna that is.
Sure.
Other desires, they also will be manifesting?
Well, let's just say somebody desires to do some pious work. There's benefit from desiring to do some pious work. It's not equal to one who goes forward and does that. The main message is that the age of Kali has this dispensation. That the things that are bad we're not held responsible for unless we act on them. And the age of Kali is such that things that are good there's benefit from, even if we don't do them. But the nature of the mind is when you contemplate on something. We know from the sequence from Bhagavad Gita, by contemplating some object, one develops some attachment, and the sequence goes on, that one actually thinking, feeling, willing is followed by doing. So we can check our thinking, feeling, and willing activities, the mind, check the mind, then we're freed from sinful reactions. Even due to bad past bad contact or impure contact with material energy. Anything? Yes?
How to see everything in relation to Krishna?
Become a Uttama Adhikari. Because that's what Uttama Adhikari see. Everything in relation to Krishna. So from our position, we're not Uttama Adhikaris. So we can try at least to understand theoretically that everything that exists is Krishna's energy. and all energy is under his direction. Maya adhyakshina prakriti. Suyate sacharachara. Everything. It's all his energy and it's under his direction. So Krishna is conscious of everything and Krishna is manifest everywhere through his energy. Mayatatamidam sarvam jagat avyakta murtina. Ninth chapter, Bhagavad Gita. So we can cultivate through knowledge. We can engage in all circumstances in the Lord's service and see that his presence is everywhere. We can realize the presence of the Lord being everywhere through the medium of service. Just said the same thing in different language. Best if we start by seeing, by attentive chanting, by seeing the Lord present in his holy name. If that went down, the other more easily follows. Krishna and his name are none different. That's the best way, and in response to your question, see Krishna everywhere. To seeing Krishna in his holy name. That awakens maximum. Awakens our dormant Krishna consciousness, which is that consciousness that sees Krishna everywhere. Chant good rounds. Yes.
By anything material be fed up, and again we become unfed up. It's desire for enjoying the same things.
Yeah.
How to get rid?
That's the program. And so your question is, how to get off that back and forth program? By becoming steady, and there are stages in bhakti. There's anishtata and there's nishta. Unsteady and steady. To get to the steady stage, one has to perform bhajana kriya. And through bhajana kriya, remove all anarthas, or nashta, prayeshu, abhadreshu. Prayeshu means almost to know. Then there's nishta. The anartha nivritti stage is best accomplished through offenseless chanting. Or trying to reduce offenses against the holy name. There's other things that we can do that are helpful, but that's the driving force. The other things that we do that are helpful, they just assist in achieving that one thing better. The verse that I quoted carries the same type of message, that yesham tvandikatam papam jananam punyakarmanam te dvandva moha nirmukta. The on again, off again is dvandva, duality. Application, slackening. Intensification, slackening. So, that stage of beyond duality, application or intense application and slackening, is achieved, or it's assisted by what's there previously in the verse. Whatever you do, don't engage in further sinful activity. The four regular principles becomes very important. And jananam punya karmana, the guide your life as far as possible by standard codes of theistic conduct. Frame your life in that way, and then the influences of duality subside. And when your chanting becomes very strong, it carries you above the influence of duality. Not just so the influence subsides and your consciousness becomes above. A very simple way of saying all of that is just carry on faithfully. And that stage will come. Faithfully and sincerely. The eligibility, there's a chapter in Nectar of Devotion, eligibility for a candidate for devotional service. It's the heading of the chapter. And the main qualification that's needed is expressed in different ways, but in principle it's sincerity or intense eagerness. I very much want to come to that stage that's steady. It's not this intermittent off on. You're acknowledging that's where I am right now, and implicit is I really want to go beyond that. But that's the eligibility. You got it. Then strive by right means. With constant practice. Because it's the mind that goes back and forth. And how do you control the mind? Very difficult. Krishna says, yes, very difficult. But it's constantly, it's possible by constant practice and detachment. Strive by right means. Theistic conduct, devotional service, association, chanting very carefully. The field of the material energy, the hold of the material energy slackens and strong determination comes. Krishna lifts you up. Basically, that's what happens. He removes those coverings and discloses your higher nature. But we're dependent upon Krishna to do that. So we have to show Krishna we mean it. That voice of sincerity that you just expressed, I mean it. I I want to demonstrate to you that I mean it, because I need your mercy to do this. It just, and it's true, we need his mercy. It comes by descending mercy. Okay. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki.
Srila Prabhupada Swami ki.